Everyone all right?
Yep.
Yep.
Hello, welcome to episode 26 of the Tottenham Way podcast. I'm back. I'm Tom and I'm back. I'm back from the dead after a week off, and Dan's kept the chair very warm, indeed, or moist. You are right to look at me strangely there, Dan. You are right to look at me strangely. Thanks for filling in, Dan. I thought it was genuinely.
You're back.
Thanks.
I was gonna say all the messages you sent when you were ill. There were some good ones.
Some choice words there.
I think I read out the best one.
The pain to stop.
The incredible pain.
It was really painful, and
it was a spider bite, wasn't it?
No, it was something that in Australia, because I had a friend come back from Australia, and she'd been really really ill, and I saw her on the Friday, and by the Saturday morning I was like proper struggling, like flu, couldn't get out of bed.
Flu.
Yeah. she said, yeah, apparently in Australia, what they'll do is if you show these symptoms of this particular flu, they'll start looking for bite marks on you, because it like mimics spider bites and stuff. So yeah, that was how painful it was.
Did they find any?
They didn't find any spider bites. They just found a very weak man with no immune system. Yeah, no, thanks for that, Dan.
Enjoyed it.
It was a good pod, I thought.
Thanks.
Congratulations on your first solo effort.
Thanks very much.
With us this week, we have got a returning Rich Arrowsmith. Rich, how you doing, mate?
I'm good, yeah, it's the difficult second album.
Yes, indeed. What was the first album?
Chelsea at Home, yeah.
Nil-nil. Review or pre...
The review.
Review.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'd sort of been done over by Mourinho.
Sounds about right. Yeah. Welcome back.
Cheers.
We've also got Phil, who you will know better as Single Malt Suds, which is, I was going to say the best at on Twitter, but I've already
second.
Given that stylish
yeah,
riot.
Yeah, Jim's got that.
Yeah.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You probably know Phil from the Advent calendar. You did the Ode to Sandro, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I did a sprawling epic of a poem about Sandro, and then quite rightly got cut down to about three verses. But
I love
it. It was a sonnet.
Yeah, sonnet.
I love that. That entry, that was wicked.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was good. That was one of my favourites.
Really nice and different.
Very kind.
Right, so we are here to discuss, we are obviously going to discuss the Sunderland win at the weekend. We are going to have to touch on the Leicester defeat that was midweek, which you, Dan, with Jim and Ollie previewed on the Monday.
Yeah.
It's been a busy week, and it's been a very sort of starkly contrasting week. And it was a really disappointing loss to Leicester in midweek. I don't know about you guys, but I saw it coming a million miles off in my delusional bedroom. But I saw that. I think it was kind of inevitable for me.
Yeah, I mean, before the game, I thought we'd win, and I purely because I thought Leicester had lost their magic. But after that game, before they played Villa at the weekend, after we lost to them, I was thinking, I might be a believer now. I might think Leicester have...
Full credit to them
as
well, because they were really...
They're good.
They are really, really good side. And they didn't plunder a 4-3 through this sort of limitless attacking football that they've got this reputation for. They did a bit of a job on us in the end, didn't they? And I think that... I don't know, I can't remember many clear-cut chances apart from Kane being put through by
Lamela.
Yeah,
there was a couple of Lamela ones where he got to it a bit quicker than you thought he might.
Yeah.
Just managed to like hit it over the bar, which half chances, I suppose.
But I thought a 0-0 would probably... It looked as if it was going to be edging towards a 0-0, and neither team would come away going, we should have won that necessarily. But if any team did, it would have been us. But then Robert Huth planted himself and... That is a header.
Bring it on ourselves a bit, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's that video, isn't there, of Alderweireld and Dier getting into a massive mix-up.
They Alderweireld throws Dyer to the ground. Probably flings him onto the floor.
But that's happened two games in a row now as well. It happened against Leicester in the cup game. Chadley was blocked, or Chadley blocks Alderweireld one way or the other. So it's a bit of a concern, to be honest. Phil, what did you think of the reaction though when we played Sunderland at the weekend? Obviously, early kickoff. Bit of a slow start, but in the end, it's a pretty heavy result.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought I don't think we really got out of third gear. I mean, I wasn't really concerned about the game. Obviously, saying that, when we went a goal down, and as you see way back into it, luckily that was only for about 40 seconds. We actually somehow managed to turn it around. I know Tom Carroll has his sort of detractors, but it seemed like that was, in hindsight, probably a perfect first half for him. Just that recycling the ball, first one touch, we were a bit ponderous, but. Yeah, I mean, it didn't really feel like a 4-1, but
I felt that at the end. It didn't feel in the same way as the City 4-1 or the West Ham 4-1 or even Monaco in the Europa League. It was a strange one, and it was frustrating certainly the first half an hour. Dan, I'm not sure how you felt about it. You were in the press box, weren't you?
I was.
Are you ever going to get tired of hearing that?
No.
From your perspective, your unique perspective.
A very low perspective, this press box.
It's very close to the dugout, isn't it?
You can't see the game pan out at all. It's like you're almost on the touchline. It's like when you sit in the first four or five rows. It was a good experience, and something I'm going to be doing more of, I suppose. But you can literally hear Pochettino shouting at the players. You can hear what Jesus Perez is telling them, showing them on the iPad and telling them to come on. I thought we were a bit sloppy in the first half. Eriksen gave the ball away quite a lot. Dyer was giving the ball away. Lamella was giving the ball away. Kane wasn't sticking to Kane. Wasn't holding up. And it just
was really that us or was that Sunderland? Because we were I think so ponderous and a little bit slow. Is but then you are reduced to that surely by Sam Allardyce for one thing. But the way that he'd set up what was a team without a lot of pace and without any real inkling to come and go all out for the win. They were there for a point.
And that showed particularly with the Kirchhoff substitution, which eventually turned the game. I think it was a bit of both. Sunderland were playing for a point and that they were setting up shop with two banks of four. Defoe was nowhere near any other side the whole game. You could see him getting visibly frustrated. But a lot of teams are going to do that against Spurs, and I think some of the players and Pochettino alluded to that afterwards, that it's going to happen more and more at White Hart Lane, and it's something you have to deal with when you're a top four, top five club, and it's your job to break it down and to play better than we did in the first half.
It was a bit typical of an early kickoff as well, with being 12:45. We were very sort of slow and simple to feet and just playing the simple passes and never really got going at all.
We don't go at teams early anyway. No. I don't think we've ever done that under Pochettino. I don't remember a time when we've really flown out the blocks. We tend to...
Well, you say that, but we started against Everton, Leicester and Sunderland, I thought, really well. The first 15 minutes of all those games was really high intensity. And that was.
But it's not to the point where we're peppering a goal or...
No, it's not, but I still felt our best football in all three of those last games has been the first 15 minutes, even the Sunday game. That was when we were playing at the highest intensity and they weren't seeing any of the ball. And I think Pochettino would love to score an early goal. For whatever reason, probably the lack of cutting edge that we'll probably come on to, it's just not happening. But I still think we start fast, and maintaining that intensity seems to me to be more of a problem than not starting
gaining
fast,
it.
If that makes
right,
sense.
Sure. Yeah. Wider picture, I've put it in the running order here, but this is the fourth time we've come off a really disappointing loss with a really impressive victory. When we lost to the Scum in the Cup, we had City that weekend, beaten 4-1. Anderlecht away, we lost 2-1. We played Bournemouth and beaten 5-1. Newcastle, we lost at home. We beat Southampton in the very next game. And now we've got this, Leicester and Sunderland back to back. We do seem to have a mentality of, if it goes wrong, it's okay, as long as you put it right. And do you think that's a good mentality to have, or and is that in turn going to develop into let's make sure it doesn't go wrong in the first place? Is that what we should be aiming for, or is it just one of those things where we're going to lose games, so it's all about not losing the second one?
I think not losing the second one. I mean, I thought that our response after the Leicester game was not as great as the games before. I thought we were a little unsure of ourselves, and I think the post-match interviews as well, the players seemed to still be have a bit of a hangover from that game. I think they really wanted to win that Leicester game, and I think that quite affected them quite badly. They weren't as jubilant as you'd expect them to be after, right, yeah, we've put that nightmare to bed, as it were.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in that sense, I think that, yeah, it, obviously it's great that we turned it around again. It's definitely a good trait for us.
Yeah, we really had point. To.
After the Newcastle game, when we lost at home, there was you could feel like the anger, and everyone was really pissed off, and it was like, we're going to put this right. After the Leicester game, it felt more like deflation.
Yeah.
Like they were just a bit like, we didn't see that coming.
Yeah,
they're not talking about the title, but I think probably behind closed doors they might have seen that if they'd beaten Leicester, you know, they would have been right in there, and then suddenly, you know,
It was a bit of a slap, wasn't it, the Leicester game?
Yeah.
Whereas Newcastle was that sucker punch, and it feels like all the other games have been a bit of a sucker punch, but that Leicester game really was, well, alright, if we're coming into this equals, we walked off our own pitch, kind of licking our wounds.
Yeah.
And I remember, I was deflated. I wasn't, after Newcastle, I was very angry.
Yeah.
You were fuming.
I was fuming. We were both fuming, yeah. To be fair. But we, I think straight away we talked about saying, oh, how that's the unbeaten run gone, things like that. Maybe this is the same sort of thing, in that we've maybe sort of thought, right, let's stop talking about the title. Let's stop thinking about us as genuine contenders if we're not winning games against our rivals.
I don't think we have been talking about the title, though.
I mean, maybe a bit like Phil saying behind closed doors and the odd person saying, you know what, we could go on a run, and then we're faced with a really good Leicester side who aren't falling away, as you alluded to earlier, Rich. They're just not going away. And
well, that run, they were supposed to have a run that was going to destroy their season. There was stuff about 6 weeks ago. They've come through it and they're joined top.
It was supposed to culminate in us.
We were supposed to be the end of that run, and
by then they'll be seventh.
Yeah. And they're top.
So. But we're still fourth. You know, it's not as if we've fallen so far behind because of Leicester. You know, United, I know they won against Liverpool, but they, again, weren't convincing. So they've got it all to do. Liverpool, I don't think, ever get anywhere near it. West Ham seem to be picking up these points, but then they lost to Newcastle as well. Teams are starting to fall maybe where they should be, let's say, now.
It's definitely looking like four from five at the top, I think, for the Champions League spots. It's just, who's going to miss out, I think.
Yeah. It's horrible. But it's been 4 from 5 for as many years as I can remember, really. I mean, I think...
Maybe not these five, but...
Absolutely. Specifically, back to the Sunderland game, Dembele came back, no major surprise that suddenly we became such a better team. And that's going forward and backwards.
He seems to be the difference between drawing or losing and winning... But not just winning, but winning really comfortably. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, you put him in the team and it turns a 1-1 into a 4-1 win.
And
every chance that would have been a 1-1 draw.
Yeah.
Without, if Carroll was playing, I think. As much as I agree with your point, Phil, Carroll might have been a sort of nice player to have in the first half, then he's just class above. He just doesn't lose the ball.
Yeah.
Drives the team forward. Every time Sunderland did get in our half, he was picking up in our half and just driving us forward, either with a pass or a run. He's arguably the most important player in the team.
It's looking that way. It's hard to argue with facts, isn't it? Really, like you say, it does seem to be the difference between a draw and a win.
I think Harry Kane's form as well, when Dembele's on the pitch, is quite stark as well. I think he barely gets a sniff, or there's a stat somewhere about his shots on target, or certainly his goals that
with Dembele on the pitch.
Yeah.
That'd have been interesting to actually find. Because there's still that thing, maybe the thing that I used to criticise him for was that he didn't make an impact. He didn't do anything. I didn't think that he made those passes, didn't shoot, it didn't seem to be anything positive. But what it seems as though Pochettino's done is do that. He still does, obviously does things, but it's so under the radar. But it keeps us as a team ticking over, rather than him just being a passenger in a side that's going to pass the ball sideways and win games 1-0 at home, a la sort of AVB. He is obviously affecting things, but he still isn't providing that killer ball and shooting from 30 yards into the top corner. Good goal that he scored. Not quite sure what some of the defence was doing, to be honest, but then that could go for all four of their goals.
Yeah.
We should probably touch on, was it Kershaw? Kirchhoff?
I don't know how you pronounce it.
Poor fella.
I don't think you need to bother. I don't think you've seen much.
Yeah. Yeah, that is... what I really liked about that debut performance was what it turned Sam Allardyce into. There was a really nice shot where he'd sort of fallen, slumped halfway down his chair, and he was sort of just sitting there chewing, and he just became one with his Mac. It was just a blob of Sam on the White Hart Lane dugout.
He deserves it.
Absolutely.
Took off a striker at 1-1 in 60 minutes. Got
way too early for that.
Well, but he said after the game that he did it because he was playing John O'Shea and Wes Brown at the back. He said it as if it was a surprise to him. But he said it was to save their legs, apparently. But I don't know how much legs this Kershaw's got, because he looks like a gangly fella who doesn't like doing...
He looks like a really budget Mertesacker.
He's
quite nonchalant about it as well. He didn't seem to be
confused regardless. That. Well, the Ericsson shot obviously deflected straight off his leg, but the way that he just hung the leg out, it was so me. And speaking of so me, it was Catamol as well. Just like, the situation's so under control that it's almost too under control, and things are going to only go wrong if you...
I did enjoy him kneeing it into his own net.
Anywhere but there, Luke. Anywhere, and that is still 1-0 to Sunderland. Yeah.
I did enjoy Eric Dyer's role in Ericsson's equaliser, though, because he picked up the ball from deep, beat a couple of guys in midfield, shifted out wide, and proper bombed into the box and said, as if to go, you know what? Let's equalise. Let's think about it.
And I think it's Sunderland.
When Ericsson took his shot, I think he was the furthest guy forward. He was really, I think he almost embodied us trying to get back into that game, which was really impressive.
He was at the under-21 game today, looking so cool.
Define cool, Dan. What was cool?
I think it was cool. He was wearing like just quite cool blue jeans.
Edgy.
Hear me out. And like a bomber jacket, and he just pulled it off. I was just like, yes, Eric Dyer.
Yeah, he's not a remarkable looking man, is he?
He's big.
He's just got it.
He's
presence.
Yeah, aura.
He's sort of strolling up and down the touchline.
Speaking of strolling, I know you guys spoke about Christian Eriksen last week in quite a lot of depth, but he's really dividing people at the moment, and I just want to ask you guys why you think that is, because he's obviously contributing. 2 goals on Saturday against Sunderland. I think those were his first from open play for a year.
First in the league since October, definitely.
That was the Swansea the 2 free kicks that he scored. He has been shunted out to the left, which isn't his, for lack of a better term, best or natural position. But we are winning games when he's out there and Dembele is in the middle. So why do you think he divides opinion so much? Because he's the only player in the squad who is like he is, that kind of sort of feather touch, a bit lightweight, a little bit more behind the ears than in the feet, if you know what I mean. Or, you know, Dembele is all about power and aggression and not losing the ball, whereas Eriksen is about getting it forward and creating chances. Do you think that Dembele embodies the whole team a little bit better than Eriksen does, and therefore Eriksen looks a bit out of place?
Did you see what I tweeted yesterday?
Eriksen.
Which I think is a good way of answering the question, why does he divide? Because I think there are two very distinctive ways of looking at Eriksen. One is you can look at him as Champions League experience, title winner, cup winner with Ajax, 50-odd caps with Denmark, Danish Player of the Year, this really experienced player who should be a leader of this young team and should be taking responsibility, polished, all the good things. The other way of looking at him, rather, which is what Pochettino's pushing when he's asked about Eriksen is just to say, well, he's 23, he's another young player in a young team, he should be allowed ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of had this discussion last week, and I was saying to Jim, I sort of see Eriksen as the former. He's got all this experience. He doesn't play like a young player. He's not raw in any way. He's just not stepping up and taking responsibility as much as I think he should. Pochettino is very much, publicly anyway, saying he's young. He's going to have dips in form. That happens with 23-year-olds. Same as Lamelo. It's the same as, Kane.
Yes.
He's 22. You know, we've got to allow him to develop. I just don't see Eriksen that way personally, and I think that's part of the reason why he divides opinion, because you've got the kind of Pochettino view that he's young and he's still learning, and the view that the Denmark boss Morten Olsen was pushing last season, which is that he needs to be better.
Yeah. Is there therefore quite a lot of pressure on Eriksen, and should we be maybe viewing him with a more of a Pochettino eye than like you were saying, with this Champions League experience, etc., because he has got quite a wealth of experience for a 23-year-old to have. 23, 24, is he?
He's 23. Well, I think he should be doing more for Spurs, because I think he's better than what he's shown, but I'll open it up.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm slightly biased because I adore the guy, but
you look like the guy.
Yeah, the receding hairline isn't helping, but it's difficult. Like Dan says, he arguably could be doing more because he's one of the more senior members of the squad. I know that sounds stupid for a 23-year-old, but he is. And
yeah,
he's playing the Champions League at 18. So
yeah, and he's been around for what feels like years. And yeah, maybe he hasn't been at his best recently. And I know he was talking, he put off contract talks to talk about, or to concentrate on his playing. So I don't know, maybe there is more to come soon, because it certainly feels like there is room for a bit more.
There's a lot of people contrasting this season's Eriksen with last season's Eriksen, and I think before that really major dip that Eriksen had after the cup final against Chelsea, it seemed to be a really noticeable sort of bookmark of when in the season Eriksen's form dipped. But for the few months previously, he really seemed to shine under Pochettino. So there seems to be this idea of what he is and what he has been for us before. So even under Sherwood, he was kind of bossing games from out on that left-hand side. Maybe it's Sherwood's influence getting back in as a coach.
Yeah.
Right, we had an iPad mishap. The mishap being I didn't charge it. So we're going to have to stitch these two things together, and we were thinking about the best way to do it and be that very natural. So, Dan, what were you saying about Eriksen? But we're not going to do that, and instead we've recorded this really awkward second intro. So, but no, we were talking about Christian Eriksen. I think we all sort of had a say, but Phil, you were, just before we had it cut out, you
That's
were
right,
mid-sentence,
yeah.
Mid-Eriksen point. So we'll sort of start again, but What was it that you were
going to
say?
Well, I've now forgotten what I was going to say. So,
yeah.
You know, that the point I was going to make was going to like clear up the argument. But I just think in general, his mentality. I think that he's kind of that unassuming guy, isn't he? He doesn't strike me as a sort of guy that minds not being the number one. But I think that's what we need him to be. I think we need him to be that creator in charge, you know? So,
do you think there's any problem with not having any direct competition for a player like him in the squad? So I feel like we've got a lot of, obviously apart from people like Kane and Dyer, but we've got a lot of other players that fill one sort of role, like Carroll, Mason, and then you look at the people that play behind Kane, Chadley and Pritchard and Son and Lamella and G when he was injured, when he was fit. So do you think that there doesn't seem to be any equivalent for Eriksen?
I think always you need someone snapping at your heels. I just think in general, I mean, you know, I'm not a professional footballer, but I imagine the idea of when you get into the first team, if you've got someone who's going to take your place, you're not going to want to give it up. And I got a feeling that he needs to understand that he needs to be our main guy.
Yeah.
And that's what we're looking for. You know, he takes the corners and the free kicks and stuff. But Lamella kind of takes that shade off him as well. So, yeah, I mean, I just think he needs to, yeah, push forward a bit.
That's a good point, because there isn't a player like him in the squad.
Mm.
But that's not, so there's not competition for him in the squad. In that front three, there's it's there's so much more competition there than there was last year. The Mela, Ali, Ericsson, Son. There's plenty there. Yeah. There was someone else, but I've forgotten. It's hard to pick between those five at the moment, and Son's a little way behind because he's still acclimatized in the Premier League, but this time next year you'd imagine it's going to be even fiercer, that competition, assuming Dembele keeps doing what he's doing. So I don't think Ericsson's place is as guaranteed as it was, and he's come off. Leicester game was an example, but he's come off a couple of times, and arguably that's because he plays more minutes than the other ones. He doesn't tend to get dropped, but there's also a case that maybe it's just because Pochettino's recognising that he is, or at least was, more out of sorts than Mello and Ali.
He plays a lot more Europa League minutes than...
He does. He plays as many minutes as anyone, barring Alderweireld and Dyer, really.
Yeah.
He very rarely gets a rest, which says a lot about him, I think.
Yeah. I imagine he covers like more ground as well. I mean, he was always one...
He covered more ground than anyone else in the league last season.
Yeah.
Is there anyone in the league out of Tottenham or everyone?
I think anyone in the league.
It was something high, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that doesn't really ring true with the sort of player you expect him to be. So maybe there's a bit of a disconnect there. He doesn't really, you know, you see him like flying around the pitch and then he gets into a 50-50 and even a 60-40 and sometimes bottles it.
Oh, he's such a bottler.
He is a massive, which is a frustrating, huge problem that I have.
So it's maybe it's that responsibility point that he needs to, you know, he is, as you say, although he's still young, he is one of the older ones, one of the older heads. You know, maybe next season he'll take that on board, but it'll be
so
interesting to see.
Fourth, is this his fourth or third season?
Third season, is it?
Yeah,
it's his third season, yeah. It feels like he's been around longer than, say, Lamela or even Chadley. But they were all signed, they were all to make Everton 7, they were all signed at the same time. But he went straight into the team, got an assist on his debut, and hasn't really looked back, whereas those guys were the only remaining members of the Everton 7. But those guys, particularly Lamela, obviously took a lot longer to get going. So I think that's another factor that makes us think, oh, Ericsson has been around forever, you know, he should be settled, but we don't think that way about Lamela. He's been, exactly the same.
Yeah, that's a fair point, definitely. Okay, well, we'll move on to, we've got the Leicester replay on Wednesday. Is it Wednesday?
Yeah.
It's live again on BBC. Sick of them. I'm really sick of them. Sick of seeing them. Sick of talking about them. But we've got Crystal Palace away on Saturday, I believe, following up that. Might as well do the same sort of questions as we do every single time. Do we see a lot of the changes? Do we see this having any bearing any relation on the lineup for Palace? Considering Palace are in really poor form at the moment, they've not scored a Premier League goal in five, they've not won in that same amount of time. They lost to Villa as well. That's definitely worth keeping in mind, I think. Seem to be hitting the Pardew skids a little bit, Palace. So I wonder if the Leicester lineup is going to be reflective of what the game is going to be like on Saturday.
I think the Leicester lineup's going to be pretty similar to what we saw last time in the Cup. And then the first team, in inverted commas, will be back for Palace. So I think.
Pochettino said that, by the way.
Oh, has he?
Oh, right. Okay. Well, after the first game, he was asked a few times, do you mind having a replay? And he said it was good because he got to give the fringe players another go.
Right, fair enough.
So he's going to play, as Rich says. It'll be a really similar
team. Is it lessons learned then? Should that squad or that team that he's going to be putting out, should they have learned the lessons from the first game? Because it was tough, that game. It wasn't a case of us shooting ourselves in the foot. The two goals we conceded weren't great, but I thought they fully deserved to get at least a replay out of that game, if not more.
Yeah, you could argue we're fortuitous to be here as it is.
So I wonder if we're going to maybe not take it as lightly. Do you think the pressure's off us a little bit?
I don't think there's much pressure on us. I think that certainly now we'll be hopefully being more focused. I got a feeling we took our eye off the ball. We thought, okay, you know, everyone's saying that we've got the bit better squad. They're going to put out a weakened side, so we're better. I think we came a bit unstuck.
Yeah,
I think they'd be much more focused. And obviously we've got a, you know, is it Colchester at home.
Yeah, so really
that's a big incentive,
away,
isn't it?
Yeah, a bigger incentive than it was. Yeah.
Another thing, a small thing about team selection was that neither Winks nor Carter Vickers played for the under-21s today, and there was no real explanation. So just a chance they could be on the bench.
Okay.
Fair enough. We've spoken about Leicester so much recently. I'm really bored of them. They're on the Berahino list. We obviously mentioned that Palace haven't won in five. They lost to City at the weekend quite heavily, but you know, it's, plenty of teams do that. Not us, but anymore. But it looks as if they are interested in one Emmanuel Adebayor. And I have to say that should he sign before the game and be eligible, he's going to score their first goal in 6 days.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think we can all agree on that.
Not even a doubt about it.
No.
Put
absolutely.
Everything you own on Adebayor to score.
People say this Spursy thing needs to be weeded out of Tottenham, but before that happens, we have to stop things like Adebayor going to a team like Palace and blatantly scoring against us on his day.
Although, people were saying similar about Defoe, but with less conviction. I don't know if anybody was going to sign for him, but I'm absolutely convinced he's scoring.
Yeah.
I wasn't convinced Defoe was scoring. I thought there was a small chance.
And
but
also, Palace are better than Sunderland. I just feel like...
And Adebayor was better than Defoe as well.
he'll get
it just feels like a perfect storm, doesn't it?
He's a perfect Pardew player. Yeah. Just for 6 months... he'll get something out of him, and the first thing will be against us. But we lost there last season. We lost 2-1. We went 1-0 up through Kane, and then I think Punchin, and I can't remember who scored the second. But they came behind in Pardew's first game, beat us 2-1, kind of put us on a bit of a rocky road really from there, because we'd just beaten Chelsea.
Burst the bubble, didn't it?
It did. Yeah, definitely. But things are quite different now. I think that depending on what happens in the cup, and if we get through it in 90 minutes, then I think we've got a really good chance of going there and winning. And I'd like to do it because I'd really love to put Palace on the skids. I'd love to see him slide. No affection to Crystal Palace whatsoever.
No, we, yeah, no.
I hate Pardew. He's my least favourite manager in the league.
Mm. And with good reason as well.
His smuggery is unacceptable.
Well, yeah, he's in the second of his usual 3.5 years at a club, and it will start to go downhill. Don't you worry. That's my slowness.
Have you seen that video of Pardew orchestrating the fans?
Yeah.
Oh, he's so smug. It's horrible.
It is, isn't it? It's so British mid-table. Like, you haven't done anything, but very, very peak Pardew. One player that we should probably mention is Kabai. He still looks pretty good against City. From the highlights, I didn't see the game, obviously. But he still looks like he's got that bit of magic and control of game, so we have to keep him quiet. I thought it was an interesting thing to bring up with Kabai is that a lot of fans were talking about him in the summer because he was obviously available from PSG. I think Newcastle were interested in bringing him back. Obviously, Palace with Pardew. Everton, I think, were making inquiries about him as well. But lots of people were saying about us being a perfect fit for him and him being a perfect fit for us, and I just wanted to know where you think it would have, how different you think it would have been. Would we have seen the emergence of, say, Dele Alli, for instance, in central midfield position, or would Dembele have been sort of given back? I know it's all a bit of moot points because it's Pochettino, he wasn't probably ever interested in a man with no knees, but it's an interesting thing to do.
My view on that is just that Pochettino knows more than I do, and he's consistently proving it.
Yeah,
and I remember in the first time he was here, and I spent most of my days tweeting about how we should keep Sandro, and it was a terrible decision to sell him. And Pochettino has just been proved right 1,000 times.
Yeah, he really has got a hell of a CV of proving everyone wrong. Yeah, at Tottenham.
And it was the same after the transfer window, and I thought we hadn't got a defensive midfielder, and look at Dyer, and I really wanted Kabai in the summer, which is where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
I thought he would have been perfect for us. He was good value. He was what we needed to, at the time, to play alongside Bentaleb, which now seems really antiquated. And now Lucas. And now Lucas Spurs, it's like David Cabal getting on the team, Pentelope's like sixth choice centre midfielder. Yeah, so what else can I say really?
Did you have any feeling one way or another on Kabai in the summer, or were you happy just not to?
He didn't quite strike me as that sort of winner that maybe we needed in the squad. You know, that sort of older head that could drag the team. I know he's, you know, a decent player, but I didn't think he was that sort of, you know.
It's maybe the reason why he's ended up at Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
And I think Pardew must have had something to do with that as well, obviously, from his time before. But yeah, I don't necessarily see whether he would have improved us to any measurable extent. I think he'd have just come in, and I don't think he would have got us closer to a title. No,
I definitely think that we wouldn't have seen the emergence of some players, and that would have been obviously to our detriment. In the long run, I thought it was just an interesting thing to think.
Yeah.
But I don't really have anything on Palace, to be perfectly honest, which is why I'm filling it with talk about Yeah. Just quickly, Dan, we talked about it off air, off pod. You mentioned Bentaleb and about how sort of far down the pecking order and things, but you were at the under-21s today, weren't you?
I was.
At Hotspur Way.
Yeah.
And yeah, a couple of players that were there and hanging around, apart from Eric Dyer and his bomber
jacket. Yeah, and Nathan Odder was there. He's come back from Rangers. Onoma was there. As I said, Carter Vickers and Wimps were among the subs, but in the second half they sort of wandered away from the dugout and came round to the spectator bit. So I think they knew they weren't going to get on, which makes me think they might be involved in Wednesday.
Townsend played, didn't he? And
I said to you off pod, Townsend was absolutely brilliant. He was under 21 level, and he was head and shoulders above everyone else. He really stood out, which shouldn't surprise anyone because he is a good player. He's an England international. He was just beating his fullback. He looked about 16 and was really short, and he was beating him every time. And he also had Walker Peters behind him because he was playing right wing, and Walker Peters is the second best player in that team by quite a noticeable distance. So I took away from it, apart from a very cold hand, was a kind of newfound respect for Townsend, because it was a freezing day. It's so nondescript, the under-21 games. You're at Hotspur Way, there's not even a stand, it's just a pitch with a railing. There's a load of people standing there, including David Pleat, by the way. Most of them...
Really?
Pleaty was there, yeah. Pleaty was there in an amazing Deerstalker hat. Quality.
Why?
Because he's on the transfer committee. He's still part of the club.
I don't know if he's still part of that.
He was scouting someone this week, I think, yeah.
Right. Scout our own players.
He does scouting, but he's it's not mentioned, but he's very much part of the club.
Right,
he's got leaves here.
I didn't know he was still. I knew he had he was a heavy influence in those first few years when we were bringing through the young British talent.
He helped sign Dele Alli. He was a big part of.
I had no idea. I had absolutely no idea.
He essentially scouted him.
Wow.
For Spurs. So we've got a lot to thank. Please.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Fair play. I mean, he's an object of ridicule because he is a ridiculous man.
I mean. The Deerstalker was amazing.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
Next to Eric Dyer. Maybe that's why Eric Dyer looked really, really cold.
Yeah, he was near
contrast.
Blue jeans.
With his blue jeans.
They were cool jeans, man. Don't get it.
Jim, to be fair, that's probably cost about £500.
Yeah.
Very quickly on Townsend, though. I mean, we were so narrow against Sunderland. Do you not think there's still hope for him?
I don't think to solve the narrow problem, the answer is not Andros Townsend.
Yeah,
particularly not from the right wing. I think all you're getting there is somebody getting annoyed a lot quicker than the players we had out on the pitch and taking those pop shots.
I'll tell you what, just to finish on the under-21 thing, Townsend's obviously the best player in that whole game, and he knows it. And it's a confident Townsend, albeit one playing at a very poor standard. It was good to see because he was taking corners with both feet. That which was quality. Like on the when he was doing it on the right, he was taking it with his left foot and in-swinging it and right the other way around on the other side. It was a little glimpse that if someone, and I think it will be Newcastle, can get Townsend confident and fired up and really at the top of his game, I think he will be a good asset for a Premier League team. Mm. I'm not saying he's good enough for Spurs, but yeah, in the freezing cold, in a really budget under 21 game, he doesn't have to play and he was really...
A club he has no future
in. He was absolutely busting a gut. And by contrast, Veljkovic, again, I said this to you guys off the pod, Veljkovic is comfortably better than everyone else as well, but he's just walking around. Mm-hmm. He doesn't give stuff. So it was a noticeable contrast. Yeah. That was the one thing I took away from watching that game.
I've dug Townsend out a lot. I'm not a fan of him as a player. No problem with him as a person. I think the whole the argument with the fitness coach was quite overblown, but I do think everyone dealt with it pretty well. I think he was playing for his future at the time already, and I think that just kind of edged him closer to the door. It wasn't ever going to, you know, find favour with someone like Pochettino. But it is good to hear when you've got, you know, these training games that somebody is putting their heart and soul into. I mean, even if nothing else, he's going to get a good transfer fee for us. You know, we're talking 14 million, which is insane. It's incredible. It really
it's
is
nonsense
to me.
John Duchampy cost 12 million.
Well, I mean, but it's all insane.
Specifically, it's insane.
No, maybe not. And, you know, we've got an international tournament at the end this year. So, you know, and he is in the fold. He's a Hodgson boy, isn't he? Okay, that's interesting. Should we do some listener questions? We've got about 20 minutes. Sean at SeanWalsh_97, friend of the pod. Would you rather Poch have total control of signings but bring in no one, or have Levy pull off another Sahar/Nelson deal with players Poch might not want? It's a good question.
That's a good question.
Very good question.
What do you guys think? How do you guys see it at the moment? I.e., where do you think the power lies in terms of transfers? And what would you like to see specifically in January?
Regarding transfers at the moment, you'd hope is it Paul Mitchell sort of doing his backroom magic, so to speak. I assume that's where the power currently lies. If it's a case of no one or someone, I think it's got to be someone, purely because Kane can't do it on himself anymore. I mean, the poor guy is being ran into the ground.
It's such a good layered question.
It is. It really is. Yeah.
It's. I think there is a third option of the power lying with Mitchell/Poch and still bringing in somebody. Mm. I think it's very much like, I think people are resigned to this idea that Poch is not going to bring anyone in because he can't identify the perfect player. Mm. But it's such a layered question, and we all know how desperate we are for a striker, but we all know how badly wrong it can go if you give you the wrong striker.
I was just going to say that I think that I'd be really concerned if Levy suddenly bought someone. I think that if Poch doesn't want someone, he thinks he's got enough, then as much as I personally think that, you know, we need some depth in certain places, if he can't find that person, he's talking about balance, all that sort of attitude, that sort of thing. If we suddenly bought someone, that I think would ring quite a lot of alarm bells for me.
Yeah,
I think
that's got a lot more ramifications.
Yeah, if we're talking long term, I think if we suddenly, you know, overruled him, Levy, and just dropped someone, like if we're talking about Charlie Austin just came in to
4 million.
But I think it was like 12 million in total with wages and stuff like that. So it gives it us like
Levy had that deal sorted and Poch didn't know.
Yeah,
that's true.
Right now, Shane Long is apparently one extra spot down the pecking order at Southampton.
I
would love Shane Long.
Yeah, I mean, it would work for me, but I think that
that's not me thinking we're so desperate for a striker, just anyone with Premiership experience. I think he runs his arse
off. It works, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm just just wonder if he's a good finisher as well. I've seen him score like 3 goals when I've gone to away games. Like, he seems to be my nemesis for away tickets. I'd say Shane Long. Dan, what do you think?
I think it's a really good question. But I think it's nice that we're in a position where I don't think the second part of the question would ever happen.
Yeah,
I don't think you will sign someone over Poch's head, which is might not have been the case in the past.
Is it a commonly held view that Sahar and Nelson, as they are the married couple, just seem to be, can't say one without the other. But is it a commonly held view that Levy just went and got him?
I think
because I heard that he wanted Chris Samba instead of Nelson.
Oh, Christ.
The heady days of 2012.
He wanted a Remy, is what he said.
A Remy,
that window.
Sahar.
Yeah. Instead of Sahar. And he... It was either a money problem or a dodgy knees problem.
I don't think Levy just bought those two and said, here you go. I think they probably said, we can afford those two, or we can get those two.
Yeah.
I don't think that Levy ever really does that. No. AVB accused him of that, was more Levy and Baldini doing something.
Yeah.
I quite like Louis Sahar anyway. I thought he was okay.
This is the eternal question that's on my podcast.
Yeah.
It seems to come up every week.
I think he was just unfortunate to coincide with a horrific dip in form.
Mm.
And the Redknapp stuff with England isn't going to help anyone. You know, he came in and scored a couple of goals, but he scored in the...
And did nothing else.
Yeah, but then Defoe made a career out of that. So...
And also, Ryan Nelson scored from a corner, which was like the first time he'd scored from a corner in about 2 years or something like that.
I thought he took the corner and scored.
Oh, no!
Yeah. When was he taking corners?
I want to say it was a cup game, but I can't
remember. I think you're right.
It was
against
Bolton in the cup, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an early rounds one.
Mm-hmm. I was there when we scored from a corner. It was wonderful.
When Ryan Nelson scored.
It's like when Norton was in corner duty on the show. That's what I think. I hit my bottom. It's happening.
I love the way that we just wanted to keep him out of the line of like defending. Yeah. So if they clear it, I don't want Norton anywhere near it. So let's have him take the corners. Poor Norton. Sent off the other day.
I mean,
Swansea.
Yeah, that'll get
overturned.
He has got a habit of getting stupid red cards. He was sent off twice, bro.
Sent off in the first game last season.
That was the final straw.
I think Walker was injured and Dyer was filling in a lot of right back, but he got sent off twice.
He loves him a bit more than Chiri Chess.
That's
a ringing endorsement, isn't it?
Really stretched. Right, let's get on with it. Ollie Whitefoot at O Whitefoot. If we won the league or a cup this season, what would you do to commemorate it? When we were in, just going back to 2012, when me and my mates that go to Spurs together, we were talking about what we'd do if we won the league, and this was sort of January time in that 2011-12 season when we were on ridiculous form. And I was like, everyone had to pick the thing that they'd do, and mine was I was going to shave the cockerel into my chest hair and then dye it blue, and then that would be a fun story.
As in shave the cockerel.
So a hair cockerel or
a shaved cockerel area?
Oh, a hair cockerel. Okay. A good question.
Yeah.
A hair cockerel.
Yeah. Ah, that's good.
But like dyed blue as well, that's the idea. What would you do if you won a cup?
I couldn't do that, I haven't got enough.
I was going to say, that's impressive chest.
That's really
cool. Cool.
I don't ever want to see examples, just for the record. It's on the record.
I didn't feel like it needed to be.
It is. I don't know, I can't trump that really. Probably get really pissed.
Yeah.
Just be really happy.
I think if we won the league, I don't think I'd know how to react to that, because in my sort of like Spurs support in life, I've never had any concept of us being able to win the Premier League. I might have to just give up football because I don't know where to go after that. It's just kind of blown the
That's
glass
true,
ceiling off.
I mean, my first game was in 96, and I imagine we all started supporting Spurs around the same time.
Yeah.
So from then on, it's not been great. Until, obviously...
No. We had more bad than good since then.
Yeah.
We are starting to...
FA Cup's always felt like the pinnacle for me, but...
Yeah, and that's fallen away, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Dan Murphy at D_Murphy84. With Dembélé going home to play chess to relax after Saturday's game, what do you do to wind down? I'm going to say, what do you do after football? Playing, watching, not just wind down in general, because this is not country for us. This is the Tottenham Way podcast. I don't really do anything after football. I just kind of lament.
Yeah. After watching football?
Yeah. After playing football, I'll go home, shower, and try and nurse my poor ankles for carrying a fat man around for 90 minutes.
There's something I've found recently, and I know... I remember speaking to Billy T on Twitter about it, and one of my friends has just got it as well. It's a de-stressing colouring in book.
Oh, right.
Now, I've never heard of these before a few months ago, and I think they're becoming a thing.
Mm. Yeah, they are.
And I'm really tempted.
Adult colouring books, basically.
Which sounds
It's double-sided, so you fill one in on one side, goes to the other, and if you've used felt tips...
Pencils.
They recommend what...
They can recommend all they want, Dan. You can't,
can't stop a man from getting the old
tips out. Well, if they recommend, it's your fault that's happened.
That's maybe, but I do think that what if you want to put one up on your wall and then you look at the other one and go, that's a nice pattern as well, I'd like to put that one up.
Have them flick through the book first.
So then you've got to choose one. That's what I mean, they should do one sheet.
Okay.
Agreed.
In case you want to have it framed.
Yeah. This is what I do to relax after a game.
I don't know if I should say this actually. There's these meditation videos.
Steady.
Meditation videos.
I occasionally listen to, and it's just like rain sounds. Mm.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's really nice. So I'll be working, and I just have like rain, and then you can like turn up thunder and stuff. Like the thunder kicks in.
Right. Wow. Nice.
You can mix your own weather.
It's actually a website, yeah, where you can you add in
and it goes with the music.
Yeah.
It's actually got drops as well, isn't it?
I actually really enjoy that. Except I'm feeling quite stressed out, just put some rain on.
In a similar sense, I tend to just like stare out the window. Especially after a defeat. I live on like the second floor, so just look out.
Wistfully.
Think what happened. Yeah, you've got nowhere to go.
Yeah, and you just
emotionally.
And then like my missus is always just like, right, so we've got shopping now.
Yeah. Now football's finished, we can go and do what we're going to do.
I just sit here and work out all of the things that I'd have done differently.
But yeah. Well, that's the thing, if I'm not working, so if I can get away from it, I would just not engage in any football. Like, no match of the day. Twitter, nothing. Like, if we've had a horrible defeat, I'll switch off for like 12 hours or something.
Yeah, it's terrible, really, isn't it? What it does to you.
Yeah,
it's just football.
I think after the Leicester defeat, it had that. Obviously, it was the midweek game, and on the Thursday morning, I woke up. I had that like 3 seconds before I remembered the result. That bliss, and it was shattered by the memory of the
disappointment. Incredible,
beautiful
day crushed.
Of gold.
Before you remember Tottenham. Yeah. Well, actually, the last question.
I should probably ask this. At JME_Watts84, Jamie Watts, how's your cat, Tom?
It's a nice. Fair play to Jamie for asking that.
Yeah,
asking the big questions. She's fine. She choked this morning. It's all right. Don't worry. She's good. Nobody needs to write in. You can send stuff.
New pet suggestions.
We'll put an address out and people can donate some well-wishing... I don't know, toys, just nothing plastic. Put up a number for cats that are starving. She's fine, thanks. If anyone followed me on Twitter, they had a very nerve-shredding day watching me update it with what's happening with the cat.
Glad to hear that.
Yes, good stuff. Glad to hear us. This is the first pod, I'm going to reference it, Dan. This is the first pod we've had with the microphone. So if our soft dulcet tones are coming out softer and dulceter than they were in previous weeks, that's because Dan went out and invested in a microphone.
Big money.
Double figures.
Ooh.
Comfortably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
And it's pretty space age and it's sitting in the middle of the table right now, so hopefully the quality this week is a lot better. But yeah, there we go. Right, I think that's it. Anything else to add?
No, it's lovely.
It was lovely. Yeah, it was a lovely pod. Right, Phil, thank you so much for coming down.
Pleasure, thanks for having me.
Follow Phil at Single Malt Suds. Where does Single Malt Suds come from?
Well, it's a bit of a long-winded story, unfortunately, for the end of the podcast, but I used to run a whiskey blog, which was called Whiskey and Washing Up. So it's a concept about, I told you it was a long-winded story, concept about it was me basically drinking whiskey, but at home when I kind of had to do chores as well. This new period of my life where I was not going out and getting bladdered, but I was kind of at home and I kind of, you know,
enjoying
things. And then so Whiskey and Washing Up, and then Single Malt Suds was the...
I really like it. It works. It rolls off the tongue.
It's the only thing that remains from that era.
I didn't know you had a whiskey blog. I'll have to dig that out.
I think I shut it down, but it's probably there somewhere.
We'll find it. Rich. At Rich Arrowsmith.
Yeah, mine came from my first name and my second name.
Yeah, you must have got in there very early.
There aren't many around. Well,
there's one. Sorry. Yeah. I forgot that.
Damn him. Yeah, there is one. But like, he's not on Twitter, so I get all his editorial requests.
And not on Twitter.
Yeah.
Just to tell the story for like the third time, I thought that was you, the Daily Mail journalist, for like 6 months.
Being relationships about him on the pod. I was like, he's fine, he's really sound. It's like,
the Mail.
Now you've realised I'm not actually that important after all.
Yeah, you're important to us. Dan, you've got new Twitter, right?
Yeah.
At Dan _ KP?
Dan, I'm still at the top, at the Tottenham Way, but I'm also at Dan _ KP for work.
For the ESPN gig.
For ESPN work. Right.
Yeah, but still follow the Tottenham Way. Follow me at TomCorns87. Thank you very much for joining us for episode 26, and we'll see you next week for a Palace review and whoever we've got after that preview. Come on, you Spurs!
'Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. It happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.